Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Barca for All podcast, and boy do we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. It's been about 10 days since the World Cup final, and a lot of things have transpired since then with Spain and Spain's coach and the federation and everything. A lot of which are things that you probably have already heard about, but this is the Barca for All podcast, so before we get into that and share our opinions and updates and everything about that situation, which does affect a lot of Barcelona players, but we do want to talk first specifically about Barcelona news and transfers and things, so just to preface what is going to come. But before we start talking about Barcelona, about Spain, whatever, I just want to check in on how you guys are doing. So, Rajesh, Borja, what's been going on? How are you doing?
Very exhausted. Like, a lot. Here in Spain, it's late August, so you will expect anyone to be chill and just enjoying the last day of vacations, but women's football is, in Spain, is crazy, I would say. Not in a good way. With this Spanish Federation thing, we'll dig into that, and then you have Barcelona for many transfers happening, some that are about to happen, very exhausting.
I do actually have a question. What is the situation like in Spain right now with the media? Is it like a nightly news story that's coming on just in your face all the time? Because even from here in the United States, where we don't care about soccer, quite frankly, it's been reported on CNN, on ABC News, like, it's been in the news. I don't know if it's been in the nightly news, but it's a story that's pretty prominent here, even.
Yeah, mostly, yes. Yeah, until today it was. Now it's probably the second most talk news of the day, because today there's been some meeting between the two main parties in political system in Spain, so that's the front cover right now. But yeah, since last Tuesday, the Tuesday of the week before, it was just about the Rubiales thing and so it's been crazy.
Rajesh, have you heard anything in your local news about the situation, or has it been quiet, similar to how it has been over here?
Actually, I don't follow the local news here, no. So...
That's okay. Yeah.
And I didn't care about the local news, or... Like, I'm kind of a person who stays away from the news and TV sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Like, I wouldn't know if it was on the nightly news, because I only watched it, like, one day last week, so. But it has been on Twitter, and it has been on it's been on our national news. Websites, at least, articles have been written on it, so. It definitely is an international story. Probably the biggest story that has maybe ever come out of Spanish women's football. I mean... Aside from them winning the Women's World Cup, like, this has made it far beyond what I ever thought it was going to be. So it's just been very crazy. But going into the Barcelona stuff, first thing, we briefly talked about this before we left off last episode. But the Esme Brooks signing it was official. I was not really expecting it to happen, because the rumor mill wasn't circulating crazy like it usually does. But she transferred over on a free signing from PSV in the Dutch league. I'm not sure how long her contract is, but she has been one of the Netherlands' most standout players, I would say, for the last two major international tournaments that they've had. She's been very good, and I think she impressed yesterday during her debut against America. But I want to hear how you guys feel about the Brooks signing.
I think it's a sign that made sense in if you are. I mean, I think we talked about this last week, specifically about the impact of Gacy leaving and how probably now Salma will be more of a center forward in the eyes of Jonathan Giraldez, and that probably leaves an empty space for a potential winger. We don't have that on the B team. I mean, we have that, but on Abaradad, which is probably the most mature winger, got injured last season in the last part of the season with an ACL, so she won't be available for quite a few months. And I don't think Laia Martínez is still on that level. And Lucia Corrales is potentially more of a left back for Giraldez. So in the end, I think any signing with what was needed, and especially coming from the previous season where I think we needed some kind of winger that was more of had more dribbling than probably more of a false winger like Mariona or Pina. Anyway, I think she will be a player that will need some time to develop. I think she has like a lot of potential in terms of physically. She's pretty sharp on the ball. She can associate pretty well. She has a great agility with her feet. Her crosses and shoots capacity is pretty good, but I think in the end the most defining thing that would be for her at Barcelona is if she can improve on her dribbling skills, and when there is a take on to get on her weak side. Like, she's right footed, and we see that she most of the times goes inside instead of outside when she plays on the left, and that's probably the biggest thing that she needs to upgrade to in order to be more useful for Barcelona. I think she didn't do bad yesterday or even the camper, but I think that would be the main thing that she needs to upgrade, yes, to improve, to be more useful for Barcelona. I don't know if you just like it, Esme, yesterday.
I think I didn't watch the game. I mean, like, I watched like part of it. I mean, the first half, and I switched off during the second half. And like, I don't think I would be able to talk a lot based on the performance against America. But having seen her showing her potential in the World Cup, I could say she could be a wonderful signing. Like, I do really like the way we are going about this recruitment and signing long-term contracts for young players. We do have Salma, Vicky Lopez, and now Esme. So, like, I could trust on things they are doing in the back end with these kind of transfers. So, like, I don't think I have a lot to talk about Esme here because I haven't followed her a lot. I would say, like, we just need to give her some time so she could add to the club and be a more better player.
I think it also made sense as a signing the fact that she was a free agent. Like, yeah, she ended her contract with PSV and she is still in a side for any other team. I think she had, like, pretty much it done with Real Madrid. At least that was reported yesterday on the Mexican television. But yeah, I think it was the main thing. I think Barcelona, despite we get some money from Geise, Esther Laborde and Codina, I don't think that we have that money to spend for signings, because yeah, we have to compensate for the Camp Nou ticketing that we are not going to get this season and for a few other things. So yeah, I think that also made sense a lot considering she was free. But I think she has potential, and yeah, as Reyes said, here sometimes just to adapt.
Rajesh did remind me in our chat that she signed until 2027, so we have her on a 4-year contract, which is lovely. But also, Borja mentioned something that I completely forgot to put in our script. Laia Codina left. She signed for Arsenal. I don't know if it's official. I think it's been rumored, more or less kind of confirmed, but rumored that they bought her off of us for 1,000 euros? Or not 1,000. 100,000 euros. It would be bad if we made a deal for Laia Codina for 1,000 euros. originally, I think it was reported by Mariaticos to be 200,000, but conflicting reports came out, and I'm pretty sure it's... Or not Mariaticos. Someone else. Miki Soria?
No, guy? It was from the... No, initially it was from, I don't know, English... I don't remember.
Them.
Graham Falk, probably. yeah, absolutely.
So those people. Now, I'm pretty sure the consensus is that it was 100,000. I'm okay with this. Not to be like rude or anything, but I think we fleeced them a little bit. I don't particularly think she's worth that much. I personally really, really used to like her before she went on loan to AC Milan. I really did think she had the potential to eventually be a world-class center back, but then her loan to Milan, I don't think it was like as good as that Barcelona were hoping that it would be. And when she came back, I just don't remember her being too impressive. The way that she participated in the minutes she got and the way that she played in the World Cup, I think really drove her price up. So, I wouldn't personally say she's worth that much, but again, I mean, it's also true that the women's football market, it's just different now, and it's changing. It's getting more, you know, clubs are just paying more for players, especially WSL clubs. So I'm not mad at it at all.
I think we started it last year. It's getting
How much did Spurs pay for Beth Anglin? Like £200,000 or something? Isn't that what happened? That really inflated the market. I remember that.
Yeah, I think it was around 150 something, 152 or 190. But I would agree on this price for Laia Codina because she didn't start any UWCL game. I mean, any Champions League games, and she barely started in the league games as well. I think it was 8. I'm not sure. So, yeah, like, this is kind of a right move for her and for the club. So, we got money. She's happy. We are happy. So, like, I don't think we have to say a lot about this.
Yeah. I mean, I really would have liked her to succeed at Barcelona. I think she had a lot of promise. And I'm sure she still does somewhere. But I don't know if she was going to be able to find that at this club. So... goodbye, Laia Codina.
Yeah, I mean, like, some of her recklessness has cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think she picked up like two red cards during her loan spell at AC Milan.
I mean, more than two, I guess.
Like that. Yeah. She's I guess known for being sort of a fiery personality, kind of mistake prone. I just don't remember her being like that a couple of years ago, but. I don't know. I think she's just turned into a different player and really not that big of a loss for us. So, Laia Codina, check that box. Next thing, AMC is probably gone, but not to the place that you probably think she's going. She was rumored to be going to Arsenal for like weeks, heavily rumored to be going to Arsenal. Maybe not anymore. She's now much more heavily rumored to be going to Club America, the Liga MX Femenil team that we played yesterday. I mean, great. It's not great. I do really like AMC, like, as a person, as a player. I feel like maybe if this was 2 years ago, I feel like, or maybe even a year ago, I feel like we would be losing a lot more in terms of having a player who quite literally can play almost anywhere on the pitch. I mean, we've used her as a backup left back, right back, left winger, right winger, striker, pretty much in every like position on either side that we can use her for. But her level, at least in my opinion, has decreased a lot in the past maybe 6 months, a year. I think letting her go would give us more room to have a player, maybe from La Masia, maybe from the B team, who can come in and be the player who can substitute in for those, you know, winger positions. How do you guys feel about AMC probably leaving? Because I've seen a lot of conflicting opinions on this from people.
It depends on many things. First of all, is we are getting any transfer fee, or it will be on free. It will be just terminating her contract. I think that will definitely be a thing. But if we talk just purely on sportive terms, I just find a little bit hard to understand if we are getting a smaller squad, like Giraldez said on the media before the Gamper game. Why are we getting rid of probably the most versatile player that we have? That's what makes me seems strange to me. So especially now that you only have one left back, I don't know. That might be a little bit strange. It's true that you get Esme that probably can play in both wings where AMC has provided, and that now the right back, which is also another one of the positions that AMC plays on. Now you have like three right backs, but I don't know. I get that there will be Barça B players that can offer similar level to AMC, but if you are, in my view, is if you are getting rid of a player, why you get rid of the most versatile? I know, for instance, a player that can only play one or two positions, like probably Engen. No hate to Engen, but it seems like a bit weird. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sorry. I truly don't. Actually, I think she played yesterday very well as a center back, but in the end, I just find hard to understand why we're getting rid of AMC. I don't know. I hope we get some details, but yeah, it seems a strange decision, I would say.
Do you think it could be due to her salary?
Would she get paid more in Mexico, do you think?
Maybe. No, I mean, like, I was trying to say, what if Barca trying to reduce her salary mass?
Yeah, that could be a thing.
I wouldn't be surprised by that, yeah.
Oh, I mean, like, yeah, that could be a thing, but does AMC earn that much?
I mean, like, she was renewed last season, so that could be an increase in the salary.
Yeah, I don't know. If you do, I mean, like, that could make sense if you do it. I mean, like, if you get rid of her and you receive as well a transfer fee. But for instance, if you terminate her contract and you have to pay later on her salary, the remaining year on her salary, like we will have to do with Nuria, that would make no sense to me. So that's why initially I said that it depends on how we are ending terms with AMC. So yeah, we'll see.
Is there any player that we could sign or even like promote from the B team that's nearly as versatile as she is?
No, I think it will be any. No, me neither. I think it will be more of a collective thing that playing a winger will be mostly, I don't know, if Laia Martret occasionally, if I mean, probably MC would, if C stayed, C would play a lot as a left back, like the first substitute of Rolfo. And that probably will now leave on the back of Ona and Lucia Corrales from the B team. And I think that would, I think it would be a collective thing, I would say. And probably more minutes for, I don't know, maybe Vicky Lopez or any other member of the first team that just last year didn't get that much minutes. I guess that would be the solution.
All right. Well, AMC, it was a good run. I guess.
What I mean, like, do we have any idea, like, how many chips are allowed in the team? Like 22 or 24?
How many what?
Like, how many players are in the squad?
If AMC leaves, it will be 22.
Yeah, so that leaves two places for players to register, right? If it's 24?
Yeah. I thought squads were 23.
No, it's 23 plus 23. One goalkeeper.
Okay.
So we already have three. I mean, including the goalkeepers, we have 22 places. So we could still register two players.
So that means either a promotion or a signing?
Maybe a signing where we don't have to actually spend a lot, a free signing or
something. Which player is free on, I mean, like, is a free agent on August? And I mean, if we are actually reducing the mass salary, and if Giraldez sticks to what he said last week about making the squad shorter, like, it would make no sense to sign any player. So I think we will just keep with 22 players, and that would be
two from the B team. Dragoni and Vicky Lopez could be the choice, I guess.
I would like to see Dragoni being promoted. I think that'd be fun. Is Vicky technically still a B team player?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then she might be the one then, honestly. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened either.
But I don't think any player will be, like, promoted. I mean, like, they will have a license for the B team, and they will play for the first team. That would be that.
Okay. Well, speaking of the B team, our first preseason match in Mexico was played yesterday night for me, very early in the morning for the people in Spain, and fairly like a normal morning time for people in India, such as Rajesh, 9 in the morning. A lot of rotation, obviously it's a preseason match, a lot of young players, a lot of us seeing them for the first time, especially ones from the B team. I would just like to say thank you, Rajesh, for pointing out Noah Bezos to me 3 years ago, I think.
It was the, like, invitational trophy in the US, I guess. Yeah, she was a captain of, I think it was under 12 or 14, I guess. Under 14.
I looked it up yesterday because I wanted to show it to one of my friends. It was the, like, some development academy in Los Angeles versus Barcelona's U15 team from 2019. And we just smacked those Californian kids. It's pretty good. There's a bunch of uploads of it on YouTube if you want to watch them for yourself. But yeah, Noah Bezos was in that team, and Rajesh pointed her out to me, years and years ago. So she featured last night in the second half, and she was good. I was impressed by her. I'd only seen her a couple times before that, but I think she's very good. We won 2-0 against America, I should say. Goals from Claudia Pina and Judith Pujols, who beautiful, wondrous, amazing goal. Crazy shot from way outside the box. I think she just ripped it and just tried to see if it went in, and it went in. So good for her. But I just gotta say, aside from, like, our team and everything, their atmosphere was incredible. The atmosphere inside the Azteca Stadium was just incredible. I loved it. I really want us to go back to Mexico at some point, like next year or the year after that for preseason, because I don't know. I just had a lot of fun watching it. But yeah, who do you guys think were your standout performers and players to watch? Mine personally were Noah, like I said, but also Judith Pujols. I think they're both great.
No, I was saying just that the altitude probably played a part, but I think it was mostly about the jet lag. I mean, players couldn't actually rest up, and it's like pretty well known that fatigue
leads to
bad decision.
And
there was like a lot of bad passes and technical mistakes. So yeah,
the pitch was a kind of spongy, right? Like the ball wasn't going smoothly. It was stopping.
Probably. I couldn't appreciate from home, but yeah, probably it made a part. I don't know. I mean, like, even Patri, which is probably our most technical player, like made a few silly mistakes. So yeah. But anyway, I think Enken made a good match. I think probably we'll see more of that in this season, playing as a center back. I think if it's well, the fact that she can play, that she can look, in front of the goal instead of playing back to goal, which I think it plays a huge thing for her. And her physicality obviously helps to win duels and so on. But anyway, from the B team, I really like Noah Bethis as well. I didn't like her actually last season on the B team. Like, she didn't look that sharp on the ball. But I think, yeah, this preseason, this has been great. And actually Dragoni was like reasonably okay. But yeah, overall, I think it was more of a collective thing rather than any individual standout performance.
There's an airplane going over me, so I apologize if you can hear that. Rajesh, in the second half, which I think is the half that you watched, did anyone in particular stand out to you?
Alexia playing as false nine, I would say. Like that was an interesting part. I wouldn't say that like it was great, but that's something that we might need to look into this season, because we might see her playing as a false nine more often if we have one of our strikers unavailable for a few games. So yeah, that was kind of something innovative from Geraldes.
If that is the end of our discussion on the preseason tour so far, then that means we have to get to talking about the Spain situation again. a wave of like dread just hit my stomach and stayed there. I don't like talking about this. I mean, it's not like the worst thing in the world, but I think it's more frustrating for me personally, because I've thought about this so many times in the past couple of years, ever since the Romper El Silencio documentary came out. It's like, it feels like all of the stuff that I've already known is like all of a sudden now coming to light. And it's just, it's kind of reliving that. And it's not a fun thing to relive, I gotta say. Like, hearing about it all again, it's not fun. Especially when it comes to like the players that I adore from Barcelona. You know, it's not a great feeling. However, things may be starting to change. Maybe. I say that with plenty of caution, given the nature of the RFEF. But this is, like I said earlier in the episode, this is the most backlash I've ever seen come out of any story that has come from this federation. Maybe ever. I mean, I haven't been following football for, like, too long, for, like, 7 years, but, like, not terribly long. So I'm not exactly brushed up on all of the previous scandals they've had, but I don't know. From my perspective, as like an American, when a soccer story reaches our media, that's kind of how you know it's a big deal, because we genuinely do not care about the sport. But enough of that ranting. I'm just going to take us through the timeline of what has happened since we last recorded, because it's been a lot. I mean, I don't even think... I'm pretty sure the No Voy a Dimitir thing speech happened after we last recorded. So that's how far back we're going, far back in the context of, like, what all has developed since then. So, did this happen? I think this happened... What day is it today? Today is Wednesday, August 30th. This happened on Friday, however many days ago that was. Friday the 25th. Rubiales was rumored very heavily to give a speech where he resigns from the Federation as president after all the backlash that he got for kissing Jenny without her consent on the mouth after... or during trophy presentations for Spain at the Women's World Cup. So that didn't happen. He instead got on his podium and said a bunch of crazy stuff, talking about, like, how it was he was being targeted and attacked by the media, and how the backlash was false feminism, and a bunch of other stuff. But the main thing that people really focused on, because it was, he said this pretty aggressively, like very aggressively, I should say. He says, "No voy a dimitir," 4 times, maybe, I think 5 times. He repeats it, he shouts it on the podium, "No voy a dimitir," I think 5 times. And for those who don't know what that means, it means, "I'm not going to resign." He shouts that. And you have the assembly who's watching this speech, not the assembly, I believe the assembly is behind them in the video, but you have a bunch of members of the RFEF, coaches, presidents of, like, autonomous community federations, blah, blah, blah. You have all those people, mostly men, might I say, who are all clapping and applauding his speech. You have Jorge Bilda, you have Luis de la Fuente, who are the coaches of the women's national team and the men's national team, respectively. You have them giving him a standing ovation for this. You have Sonia Bermudez, you have her and Montse Tome in the front row, which I'll get to in a minute. Montse isn't clapping for him, but Bermudez is. They both look visibly uncomfortable. And then behind those people, in, like, the second rows and beyond, you have like Federation presidents. What are they called? Like, presidents of, like, the specific autonomous communities of Spanish football, like Catalonia, Valencia, stuff like that. What's the word for them? Do you know?
We call it just the los presidentes de las autonómicas, which is just the president of the regional federations.
Yeah, the regional federations. So those people, all those people are clapping, plus some other people here and there that aren't specifically of those titles, but, like, similar-ish people involved in the RFEF.
If you leave me to add, alongside those people, there were the three daughters of Rubiales.
Yeah.
Which was kind of, I don't know, dodgy, or I don't know how to phrase it, but placing under or teenage girls in that scenario, once they will be recorded, and the fact that they were placed, as well as Montse and Sonia Bermudez, all female on the first rows. Like, it was intentional. Yes. It was dodgy as well. And yeah, pretty bad to watch.
Yeah. My bad. I said I was going to get to that in a minute, but I'm probably going to forget about it, so I'll just mention it now. Bermudez and Montse Tome and some other people came forward a couple days later and basically were like, yeah, we were pressured to sit there, where we were forced to sit there in the front to, like, make Rubiales' speech seem like women were endorsing it to make it sound better. So that, which is just so stupid. And they also resigned from the RFEF and the coaching staff and everything like that, which was just a whole thing. So, after that, there is immediate backlash to all of this happening. I believe it started, I was asleep while this was happening, but I believe it started with Alexia tweeting a tweet in support of Jenny that had the word sackable in it, which means it's over. And she said, "Contigo, Jenny Hermoso." I'm with you, Jenny Hermoso. And after that, everything just sort of spiraled. I mean, people from Spain, and then like the Spanish women's national football team, and then from Barcelona, and then Spanish national team, or like Spanish female footballers from across the league, and then it got into Europe, and it just made its way outside of this bubble. And all of these people coming forward with support and against Luis Rubiales, it really became a really huge story that more or less turned into a movement, the Se Acabó movement. It became sort of this representation of, you know, it kind of like what we had in America, the Time's Up Me Too movement, sort of, where a lot of people started to come out and support and then talk about what the misogyny happening in women's football and how normalized it is. From there, the 23 players from Spain's women's national team that appeared at the World Cup, plus Spanish national team players from way before 2023, the ones that were phased out unfairly by Jorge Vilda in 2017, 2016, 2015, who protested against Ignacio Quereda, players from the 1996 team who wrote and signed the first request for Ignacio Quereda's dismissal, players from all different eras of the Spain women's national team and just Spanish football in general, coming out and giving their support to Jenny. And it culminated in a letter that was signed by all of those players, by 81 different players. I believe all of them have represented the Spanish national team at some point. And now we have those 23 players and beyond refusing to play for the Spanish national team until Luis Rubiales and Jorge Vilda both leave. We did have a couple of men come out and say, specifically Borja Iglesias, he said that he was going to refuse national team call-ups until the situation was resolved, which I think is incredible from him. Sergio Roberto also tweeted his support for Jenny. Hector Bellerin also did. I'm trying to think of other people. A couple of men's teams from Spain supported Jenny. Cadiz, Sevilla. Sorry, there's a bus outside my window. I do want to mention a little bit about Barcelona's statement. I don't think it was strong enough. Some people have said that, like, it's because we can't make it stronger because of legal backlash. I don't know how true that is. The main issue that I and other people had with Barcelona's statement is that they condemned what happened, but they also didn't mention Jenny by name, and they also didn't call for Rubiales to be fired or removed from his position or whatever. I think it was just weak. I don't like that we didn't bother to mention Jenny's name. I think she's too big of a club legend for us, and she's done too much for this club for us to not be a lot more careful about that statement. But Laporta more or less walked back on that before the América game, if I'm not mistaken, and was basically like, yeah, he should go. He probably shouldn't be the coach anymore, honestly. Kind of stuff like that. I don't remember what exactly he said. But before that, Xavi and Iniesta both spoke out against what Rubiales did. And there's another airplane flying over me right now. It's, like, so loud. I live, like, 15 minutes away from an airport. So this is This is what you get when you live where I live. But Xavi and Iniesta both commented on the situation, and I really like what they had to say about it. So that's more or less where we leave off before we get into the more technical problems that Udogbiales is facing. Around the time that the backlash that he was getting in the Siaka Bowl stuff and was at its peak, he was suspended by FIFA. He was, I think it was for like 2 years or something, but he was more or less removed from his position. Also, before I continue, Elena Fort did talk about that. So she was also another one of Barcelona's board members that spoke out pretty at length in support of Jenny. So there were people within Barcelona that did speak out about it. Obviously, all the players, some men's team players, other people. But the statement that the club made in itself just was quite honestly subpar. Also, God, I'm just remembering all these different things. I don't think, maybe sporting director. I don't remember what his title is. I forget. But Marco Zubizarreta, the guy who more or less orchestrates all of our transfers for the women's team, resigned from his position in the RFEF. I know that he held a position specifically on the National Committee of Women's Football, but he resigned from that. So a lot of people within Barcelona doing good things. So I don't want to imply that this situation speaks for all of the people in Barcelona that are working internally and have opinions about it. It's just maybe our PR team could have done a little better. But yeah, back to the actual consequences of Rubiales' actions. He was suspended by FIFA, pretty sure for 2 years, and every member unanimously of the RFEF's assembly requested his resignation. He's still refusing to resign. Okay, maybe not. The FIFA suspension was for 90 days. My bad. So, maybe not very long. But yes, the RFEF also does not want Jorge Bilda to continue as coach. He wants to continue as the member of the federation, but they don't want that either. So both of them are in very hot water. They have the potential to more or less be blacklisted from football, let alone women's football. Rubiales is facing a potential 15-year ban from the sport, which he ain't getting any younger. So a lot of things have transpired. Rubiales obviously needs to go. This isn't really anything up for debate. In the past couple of days, there have been people coming out of the woodwork being like, Jenny is imperfect, and Jenny was laughing in the 10 days after she was sexually harassed by her boss. Therefore, she is not a victim. Just garbage like that. I mean, but that doesn't speak for the general consensus of where we're at. I think pretty unanimously across the board, people are coming out in support of Jenny. And not even so much in support of Jenny, I mean, obviously in support of her, but also her as a representative of people who know what it's like to be treated inappropriately, especially in a sexual context, and not feeling what happened to you not being like bad enough to immediately know it's wrong, or like bad enough to immediately speak up about it, but also bad enough to know that it makes you feel deeply uncomfortable. And I personally, I've felt like that in some situations before in my life. maybe not even from like a sexual standpoint, but like people saying things to you that you realize later maybe should be said. People like maybe touching your shoulders or caressing you in the way that you just don't like. But you understand later, whether that be days, weeks, months, years, that probably shouldn't have happened to you. That's what a lot of people deal with. And Jenny herself said that it took her a while to like truly process it. You know, she had to sober up a little because she was like drinking after partying, after winning the World Cup, as you do. But she had to sit on her feelings for a while and realize that probably shouldn't have happened to her. And that's just a natural progression of the complex human emotions that come with being harassed or assaulted or, you know, harmed in some way or another. So I think it's important that people understand that and people understand the complexity of that. And at the very least, if nothing else comes out from this, I really do hope that like people across the world, and especially in Spain, especially in Europe, especially people who like are emotionally invested in the story, have learned something about consent and the dynamics of consent, and especially like in the workplace. I don't know if anyone needs to be told this, but you're not supposed to kiss your employees on the mouth. Like, you're just not supposed to do that. I feel crazy the way people are like, you know.
I don't know from abroad how this has been felt from people. Here in Spain, it's probably much different because it's covering all the news. And actually, it blends with the fact that we got many public debates about consent, sexual harassment, on several laws. So in the end, there is still like a lot of education that needs to be taught about these kind of things. Like, there's, when these videos came up, many people even doubted more about Jenny and her false accusations, because she was not crying her home instead of celebrating that she won the World Cup and so on.
Yeah,
so, but you laugh, but here in Spain, like, there is a lot of, even I had this not a debate, but I was discussing with my parents about that last time.
Really? With your own parents?
Yeah, my parents were,
wow,
especially my mother especially was very vocal about that. If she was sexually harassed, she would be like laughing, celebrating, and so on. So in the end, it's like there is a lot of education that needs to be. There are a lot of people that need to be educated, and yeah, I mean, like, and actually, it's also a lot of there is a lot of people going after Jenny, asking for go to the judge and go in front of a judge and go a declaration. I mean, like, there is a lot of focus on the victim and not on Rubiales and what he did badly. Why a lot of things about the consent that needs to be better explained, better. I don't know how to say, but in the end, it's like, it's been pretty sad, the fact that there is a lot of room for improvement, a lot of a huge path to cover still, just so that we are on the same page as a society. So it was sad on that sense, and the fact that Jenny's been publicly chased and bullied from a certain political,
yes,
right wing people. Yeah, actually, this guy Alvise Pérez is just some former dude that was very linked to Ciudadanos and later on Vox, which is the right winger party here in Spain. So
yeah,
that tells a lot. And yeah, that's I think there is a lot of sad things. The only positive thing is that if we as a society, we get better, and whenever we have this behavior again, because that will happen, that we get a very different response. But that's the only positive take I can get from.
Thank you, like, for offering your perspective on, like, Spain, because I think from an American perspective like mine, people who follow women's football, or I guess women's soccer, we generally come from like a more center left or left wing perspective, just because of, I think a lot of it is because of like the influence that the U.S. women's national team has had as sort of this like beacon of politics and sports that we otherwise wouldn't really have in this country. Because most sports in the United States are very apolitical. But the U.S. women's national team is one of the only sports teams here that I can think of that is very involved in, you know, feminism and equal pay and blah, blah, blah. And that in itself, I think, attracted a very specific audience to women's soccer in this country. So when tweets are about Luis Rubiales make it onto the very American focused media, celebrity media aggregate account PopBase, which I just think is so crazy that this situation made it onto PopBase multiple times, there is a very clear consensus amongst us American women soccer fans, like, this is not okay, this is a problem, get him out, situation is over, there's no need to talk about it anymore. And that compared to Spain, which is, because this, when you're in Spain, it's not so much an issue of Spanish women's football, where I assume the audience is similarly politically aligned, but Spanish football, which from my understanding is for a lot of people, like the peak of masculinity and manhood, and represents a lot of what it's like to be a man. Especially when you have Luis Rubiales being chastised by international media for something that probably a lot of those types of people can relate to doing to women, and just the mentality of like treating women as your subordinates and being able to get away with sexual harassment in ways that you could in the 50s and the good old days, in ways that you can't really do that anymore. So that is just a really interesting dynamic, because for me, I see this as like, this is stupid. Why is it even a discussion? You're not supposed to kiss your employee if you're a boss. You know what I mean? But hearing it from your perspective, it's honestly, it's very eye-opening. Because at the end of the day, it's happening in Spain. So, you know. Rajesh, you had your mic open for a second. Do you have thoughts on this too?
I particularly don't have any thoughts, but like, we know what kind of person Rubiales is, and
right.
Yeah.
And we've known it for a while. I mean, he has plenty of charges against him and accusations of using RFEF money to pay for orgies and like corruption of misappropriating funds and whatever. So yeah, you're right. This is
Not just that, like, he always tries to control the women's football. Like, this Liga IF was under the control of RFF year back, and when they created this new league, he forced the referees into asking for salary, and they went on to go on a strike, which actually, delayed the league to start. I don't know if the same referees are now giving a statement. I don't think so. We have seen anything like that.
I haven't heard anything from them.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, he's someone who is like more like a male chauvinist who tries to control everything under him, and he's someone who doesn't like to be down or bowing down to anything. Yeah, we have noticed this since 2021, I think so. Like, there was a time when there was a snowstorm and these players were asked to travel to play, and they were playing, making fun of it with the snow. And I think it was Caro who posted something in the Instagram, like, this federation isn't looking after the players or something like that, I think. So, yeah. So, there is a time for everything to end, and, like, this is too much. And, like, the time has arrived for him to leave.
You mentioned Rubiales, but I think it comes from a way long back, and it's more than Rubiales, I would say. I mean, this one positive thing as well as happened this week is that many people have speak up, like Toña Is, like a former...
Mar Prieto.
Yeah, some workmates with Rubiales pointing out his things, but I think the most significant one was from holy shit, Vero Boquete. I just forgot her name for a moment. Yeah, and it was on Radio Nacional de España and Neutral. Basically, she just pointed out about the whole federation. I mean, Rubiales is a symptom. It's a particular name, but the sickness and the whole point is within the Real Federación Española de Fútbol and how it works. Because it happened with Villar, it happened with other coaches, not just with Bilda. And one key factor and one key point that she stated and that she highlighted is that the federation has to be rebuilt from inside, because it will probably most likely come up another Rubiales 2.0 or a Villar 3.0. So it has to change from the structure of the federation if you want a really significant change in the how they treat women, women's football, and so on.
Realistically, do you think that... Well, I ask this question, and this will probably be one of the last things we talk about. I ask what I'm about to ask because when the regional presidents of the RFEF, when they asked for Rubiales' resignation, they more or less verbatim said that there needed to be a total and complete restructuring of the management within Spanish football. I don't know if they specifically said Spanish women's football, but they said that there needed to be a complete restructuring of the management within the sport in Spain. I personally don't believe that, but like, just given the history of what we've all seen happen from the RFEF after these many, after this has happened many times before. But you, from your perspective as a Spaniard who has been following the sport for much longer than me and who has experienced the way that it's run for a very long time, do you think it's realistic that that would actually happen? That even a little bit, that there would be structural change in favor of letting women's football flourish and grow, and not just that, but also be like a safe place where women don't have to worry about being abused or harassed? Do you think that's like an actual possibility?
I have many doubts because regional federations are pretty much run by very similar people to Rubiales and very old people with very old-fashioned values. I don't know. Let's see what happens, because there is potentially the chance that if he doesn't get banned from FIFA, and if he doesn't get banned from the government because the DDAD doesn't approve the proposal that they sent to make the accusation for Rubiales, he might run again in 2024. So we will see. But the most optimistic scenario for me is it gets elected any alternative president who is more passive on the women's football, and that he appoints someone specifically for the women's section, very different from Andreu Camps, very different from Bilda, very, very different from Rafa Del Amo. And that person that gets appointed has a very new mind, a more modern mind, let's say, that more positive about women and that has experience on women's football. That's the only scenario that I see, because it will mostly be a very old man. And yeah, probably. I think that would be, yeah. But I think okay. It's very like so soon to call, because I don't know, in the last presidency it was it didn't get to elections finally, but it was gonna be about Rubiales and Casillas. And Casillas is his things, but probably is more open about women's football and so on, and he's more modern and more, I think he's in some way friends with Paredes, or I don't know, that would be a positive potential thing.
Does he have any interest in running again? Do you know?
I don't know.
I thought he gave that up.
He was, his first experience was not very positive. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. It will be still 1 year left because it will be on the first semester of 2024. Where we will first know who want to run and who doesn't. And we'll see, but I don't know, we'll be skeptical.
All right. So I guess that's probably the best that we can leave you with. Cautious optimism, probably more realistic neutrality, maybe a little bit of pessimism. Lots of conflicting emotions, as we've learned is the reality for a lot of people in the past couple of days. Okay. Well, I think that's all for what we want to talk about now. We figured out throughout recording this episode that we skipped quite a lot of important details of just like everything that's been going on, because it's just been that hectic. I mean, so many things have developed in the past week, and the story is still not done developing, so we will try and update you the best we can the following episode on everything going on with the club and with Spain and our players and blah, blah, blah. So, all right. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.